Remember the good old days before Microsoft Word had autosave? You'd type up some important document and then your computer would freeze and you'd lose hours of work just because you forgot to hit save? Well, that's what it's like going online without ExpressVPN. Every time you're connected to an unencrypted network, whether it's in an airport, a hotel, a cafe, or anywhere, your online data is not secure. Any person on that same network who knows what they're doing can gain access to your personal data. Bank logins, credit card details, passwords, all the stuff you don't want people seeing. Unfortunately, hacking has become much easier than it used to be. People don't even have to be exceptionally skilled to do it, and there's a lot of money to be made by selling your information on the dark web. ExpressVPN stops hackers from stealing your data by creating a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. It's incredibly easy to use. Once the app is running, you literally click one button to get protected. And it works on your phone, laptop, tablet, and more, so you can stay protected on the go. I've been using ExpressVPN for a little while now, and I can rest easy knowing my info is safe and secure. I've heard horror stories of people who've been hacked, and it sounds like a massive pain to try to get any resolution in the aftermath, so I am not interested in finding out what that process is like. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/film. That's expressvpn.com/film. And you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/film. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. This year has gone by incredibly quickly, but it's always nice to pause and take stock. What's something you're proud of in 2024 so far? What's something you still want to accomplish this year? I know I'm guilty of falling into a routine and not always thinking about the bigger picture. But as the great Ferris Bueller once said, life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you can miss it. So it's crucial to take a moment to celebrate your wins and make adjustments for the rest of the year. Therapy can help you contextualize your progress and set achievable goals for the next 6 months. As you surely know by now, it's not only for people who have experienced major trauma. Therapy is helpful in all kinds of ways, including learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. If you've been considering trying therapy, check out BetterHelp. It's fully online and was specifically designed to be flexible and customizable to your schedule. To get started, just fill out a brief questionnaire that matches you up with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Take a moment. Visit betterhelp.com/filmdaily today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/filmdaily.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, June 11th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to present an interview with Scott Glassgold, one of the producers of a horror film that came out earlier this year called Tarot. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst, Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right, Ryan. So we rarely cover short films anymore at Slash Film, but back in 2022, I spoke with the filmmakers behind a horror short called Blink that I thought showed a lot of promise. That project starred an actress named Sophie Thatcher, who went on to star in Yellow Jackets and The Boogeyman. And it was co-written by director Spencer Cohen and producer Anna Hallberg. And it was also produced by a guy named Scott Glassgold. And that trio teamed up again for a feature film earlier this year called Tarot, and you had a chance to speak with Scott. So why don't you tell me a little bit about that conversation?
Yeah, so this was something like a lot of times, just to give you guys a window behind the scenes, like, you know, what'll happen is PR people will reach out and be like, do you want to speak with this person about this project? What happened is as listeners of the Monday podcast know, I come on and do box office analysis, and Tarot had like a soft opening weekend in May, and it, you know, was met with frankly pretty negative reviews, and so it just seemed like dead on arrival. But I kind of had a different look on it, and in realizing that they launched this very unique marketing campaign that involved like no billboards, no TV spots. It was all digital, meaning it was also much cheaper than your typical marketing campaign. It was also only an $8.5 million budgeted movie. I looked at it and was like, whoa, 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 wait, did Sony just sneakily make like a sleeper hit here? And as the week's gone on, it became very clear that that's what happened. So I wrote an article to that effect, and Scott reached out to me and was like, you know, hey, you know, and then we just got a conversation going. And I was like, well, do you want to come on the podcast and talk about it and tell us how you did it? And he was kind enough to do just that. So we got to talk about how they pulled this off, you know, again, working against traditional marketing methods for a studio movie. So we got a lot of insight into that. And I thought that Scott was very honest, which I appreciated, like, because I even asked about the reviews and some of these things, and not to spoil what you're about to hear, but he had a lot of insight for us. And when you talk about, you know, budget, marketing, relativity, all these things that I harp on all the time, this was a real window into how that stuff comes together and how you can craft a hit if you're thrifty.
Yeah, for sure. So you actually published an article with some insights from this conversation with Scott last week. And the article is called Tarot is 2024's Sneaky Horror Box Office Hit. Here's How Sony Made It Happen. So I'm going to link to that article in the show notes, because there's, you know, a lot more than just it's not just a straight Q&A transcribed like we often feature on slashfilm.com. So I encourage people to read Ryan's like analysis and sort of like the feature incorporating some of these quotes and things like that. But yeah, we were just listening to the actual audio of your conversation, and we were like, and I basically was like, this is interesting to me. Maybe it'll be interesting to some of our listeners as well, who care about some of the stuff that we talk about on the show all the time. So here is your conversation with Scott Glassgold.
You know, obviously my interest in this came up when I sort of saw that the marketing campaign was what it was. And, you know, as a guy who covers box office a lot, I think my biggest thing is that, you know, movies, it's all relative to expense, and marketing can be tremendously expensive. But I think what I came to understand with this movie is that with that thriftier marketing campaign that seemingly was a little more targeted, you guys actually wound up in a position where, you know, you had positioned yourself well for profit. And I just kind of want to explore that a little bit with you. So can you just tell me first off, like, you know, how did you get involved with the movie? You know, what, you know, how involved were you in, you know, day to day, and, you know, what was just your position with it?
Sure. I produced the movie. I had previously worked with Screen Gems on a lab actually called Scream Gems. And that was a lab that nurtured first-time filmmakers. So we would allot a certain amount of money to go make a short film. And it was a good way to sort of give filmmakers an opportunity, but also, you know, sort of test out concepts, if you will. So the first filmmakers I brought into the lab at Screen Gems were Spencer Cohn and Anna Hallberg, who were, as you know, the writers and directors of Tarot. So we made a really great short called Blink with Sophie Thatcher, who's amazing, who, you know, is on Yellow Jackets, and I made Prospect with her, and Pedro Pascal started it. And speaking of Austin, so the short was really well received. It debuted at South By, and it had a ton of buzz. So off of that short, Spencer and Anna were hired to direct Tarot. Now, they had already written the script for the studio, but it wasn't until, you know, Blink demonstrated their ability as directors that they got the job to direct. So when Spencer and Anna were hired to direct, I came on as a producer on the project. And then that entailed us all going to Serbia and shooting the film. I guess we got there in late July and we shot through November. So, you know, to answer your question in terms of my work on it, you know, I was the on the ground producer. I was the only producer there, and we produced the movie. And I think that covers your question.
Totally. Yeah, no, 100%. So. All right, so you guys, you know, shoot the movie. I believe the budget was, the reported budget's 8 or 8.5, somewhere in that neighborhood. Is that correct?
Yep. Correct.
Okay, so, you know, not a huge budget for a studio movie, and but, you know, the general, I think, thinking most of the time in Hollywood is, okay, so you spend, you know, $10 million or less for a movie, but then you're going to spend $30 million to market the thing. My sense is that that's not what you guys did.
Correct, correct. You know, it's interesting. So this movie is a PG-13 horror movie, and we have a demographic that certainly skews younger. You know, in many ways, this movie plays as like what we like to call sort of like a gateway horror. You know, so since we're not showing the gore and kills on screen, it you know, ostensibly plays to even a broader audience and a younger audience, right? Versus like there's a subsection of horror, and I certainly am in that subsection where, you know, they want a hard R-rated horror with lots of gore and blood and gosh. You know, I love them, and I have plenty of movies I'm putting together for that crowd. But this plays a little bit more broad. It plays broad in the sense of, like, it's for horror fans, and I think for non-horror fans or, you know, sort of the uninitiated, if you will. And I say that because, you know, that group that I'm speaking to tends to be younger. And when you're talking about $30 million spends, you're talking about big TV ads during, if we're looking sort of like the comparable lead-ups, right? Like, it would have been during the NBA Finals or the NCAA Championships or, you know, the equivalent of these big events leading up. And our audience is just not on network TV watching these shows. So when you spend X ostensibly, if you're talking about NBA Finals or NCAA Championships, you're spending millions of dollars on television, and your audience isn't there. So the notion of going digital is both, you know, hyper-targeted for your audience in that you're hopefully meeting them where they are. And it's not incidental that it's cost-effective, but it's sort of a confusion of the two, a confluence of the two, I should say, not a confusion, a confluence of the two, right? It's both cost-effective and ostensibly, you know, most targeted.
Okay, that totally makes sense. So I know you probably can't get into specifics, but, you know, so we're talking about, you know, that $20, $30 million marketing spend that you might typically associate with a movie like this. Can you give me some sense of what the budget was that you guys were working with?
I really, just like, even like contractually, I can't speak to a number, but I could just say probably that it's significantly less than that.
Right, and that's what I know you can't say, you know, specific figures, but so what I had read is that you guys pretty much specifically focused with targeted advertising, like all digital. You didn't even do billboards. You had no TV spots. So can you speak a little bit to the specifics of the strategy and what you guys tried to do?
Yeah, we had a very, very large presence on TikTok, on YouTube, and we also had it on streaming. So beyond sort of the those apps that I mentioned, we still existed on Hulu, Peacock, any ad tiered streaming service. So that's a way to sort of grab that television viewer, right? A little bit more of the traditional viewer. And get into that space without sort of the buy-in of network television. But that's, you know, so it was, and look, it's a combination. So it's a combination of purchasing ads, but also, you know, the social media team on this film did a phenomenal job. I don't remember exactly our numbers of where we ended in terms of followers on TikTok, but they, you know, they started from nothing. Whereas sometimes films will come out and they will co-opt their studio's TikTok page. Now, don't get me wrong, Sony has a, you know, a TikTok page, I think, with 2 million viewers, and they were incredibly supportive of running our stuff on there. But separate from that, Tarot had its own TikTok handle and was outputting really clever material, you know, on the build up to the film, certainly daily. We did a spot that we shot at the Grove, I don't know if you saw it, that was people sort of, you know, arriving at the theater not realizing that behind this huge tarot display were costumed performers, and they were costumed in the monsters of our film, and they were jumping out of the display, scaring people. And you can look at the numbers because it's out there, but I'm pretty sure we had about 20 million viewers in 24 hours. Like, it was huge.
Jesus.
And it totally resonated with precisely the group of people that we wanted to hit. And Sony Marketing was smart enough to invite a couple influencers there too, so they were involved, you know, in posting on their page. So I think part of sort of the holistic approach to this digital marketing is, yes, there's the ad buy, and then there's also the social supported, that is, generated content that I think authentically speaks to this digital audience. And I think they need to work in tandem. As a father of three teenagers, I can say, you know, whenever it feels like you're selling too hard to this generation, they tune out. But again, if you can meet them where they are and you know, do a prank like that, that obviously, you know, incorporates all your vitals of visuals from the film, release date, that is a theatrical release, all those things, into something that it, in of itself, is original entertainment, it goes really far. So I as we're speaking, I do think it's a really important thing, you know, to sort of, for the landscape of it all, where a digital campaign transcends just buying ads, which obviously are super important and you know, build as the film nears release. But it's really a combination of those things.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
So I get a couple things that you touched on that I'd like to circle by. So the ad-supported streaming is a relatively, you know, I mean, obviously you had Tubi and some of these other companies doing it, but now you have Netflix, you have Prime Video, you have all these bigger players in that space now. How has that changed the thinking for you guys? Is that like just this brave new frontier and like, you know, is that, you know, more affordable than buying on traditional TV, or how does that kind of factor in for you guys at this point?
Look, my understanding is that it is. Again, I'm always going to be careful to talk about costs and numbers.
Oh, for sure.
But I think it's a way, again, to your point, to reach audiences. And the interesting thing too is, there's so much analytics within those streaming spaces of, you know, who the actual viewer is, what the trends are, that I think, and again, not necessarily my expertise, so I say it all with a qualifying distinct, but my understanding is that you can be very targeted as to where you're even running those ads. Where, again, if you're you know, paying for a big game or something like that, you're running a blanket campaign, and that's going to cost you, you know, X or Y amount of money. So this, I think, it allows for a bit more of a precision strike.
That makes sense. And then, so you mentioned, you know, you were on TikTok and you mentioned teenagers that you have, and you know, you don't want to over market to them because they feel like, you know, they'll tune out. But so it seems like you were aiming for a younger audience here. Do you have any sort of demographic breakdown of what Tarot ended up being as far as like the audience, you know, age demographics or anything? Like, do you guys know where, you know, where your audience essentially came from in the end here? Because right now you're at 42 million. Yeah. The only Hollywood horror movies that have made more money than you this year are The First Omen and Night Swim. And I don't know how things are going to go, but you might be within spitting distance of both of those by the end of it.
Yeah, it's really exciting. Just in terms of the scale of the film that we were to sort of be where we are, it's super exciting. I haven't seen final demographics yet, and I think there will be sort of, you know, an output once we get to the end of our run, but I haven't seen those numbers yet, and they might exist, and Sony might have them, but I have not seen them yet.
Okay, gotcha. Is your sense that it was a younger audience, though? Is that, like, kind of what you guys were aiming for?
For sure. there's no doubt in my mind that we ultimately skewed younger. And that was always the intent. It's interesting, you know, when you set out to make these movies, it actually is a big sort of deliberation, the PG-13 versus the R. And ultimately, you know, the decision was made, it was a studio decision ultimately, but it was made, you know, prior to production. And we felt conceptually, you know, some of our North Stars on this movie were the Ouija movies and Truth or Dare, which played to really wide audiences. And we felt like that lined up conceptually with what this movie was.
So I want to speak a little more broadly here. I think one of the things that I've harped on a lot in recent years, and I'm sure people at studios don't like me that much for this reason, but like I complain about budgets all the time. And, you know, and I will talk about how a movie, you know, seems to flop unnecessarily by my estimation. And look, costs need to come down. I don't think anyone in Hollywood's going to argue with that. But, you know, you guys actually managed to do that here. And a lot of that had to do with not overspending on marketing. And do you think, you know, sort of taking the approach you guys took here with Tarot is something that should be applied to more movies going forward? Like, do you believe that, you know, marketing spends can and should come down, and, you know, as a result of your experience here?
Look, I think every film requires its own unique strategy and approach. And I think, you know, whether that's budgetary, whether that's your target audience. So I think for all of us making movies, we definitely feel the mandate of bringing costs down. I think that starts with the budget of the film. And then I think, you know, once the film is made, equally the marketing costs are a consideration. I think, you know, what hopefully this approach shows is the ability to be nimble and be precise, and to look, I actually think it sort of speaks to the larger space of everyone is looking at theatrical and trying to figure out how to make it work, both in terms of drawing people into the theaters and to your question of being cost effective. So I have to think, you know, like anything else, we'll look at this certainly as a success, big success, and you know, to be clear, attribute all that to Sony in terms of designing this approach. And then I think from there, like anything else, you know, you learn from success as much as you do failure. This is a success you can learn from. And I think you say, okay, like X, Y, and Z really worked. And to your point, it's like, oh, maybe you look at the demographics and say, okay, perhaps we could, you know, broaden it here or there. But I think it's certainly something to build on without a doubt, because it clearly worked.
It's no secret that critics were not necessarily on this movie's side. But so how challenging is that to overcome when you sort of start to, I mean, like, do you guys have a sense that that might be the case when you're putting it together? Like, you know, not that you're to say you don't have faith in the movie, but you go, okay, maybe this isn't going to be a critical darling, but how do we sort of navigate around that? Like, is that something you guys have to really consider, and how hard is that to sort of navigate?
It's a great question. I think when we're making the film, we know we're sort of making a populist film, if you will, right? It's a PG-13 terror movie, and I think, look, I'm a student of film criticism. Like, I learned my first things about film from Pauline Kael, and then, you know, all the way through to, you know, Jan Maslin, A.O. Scott, Richard Schickel, like all these really smart critics who have thoughtful responses to films. So I love film criticism, and I think it's a cornerstone of what we do. And so I say that before I say anything else. So, you know, when it comes to our reviews, again, if Ouija is our North Star on this, like, that's at 6 at Rotten Tomatoes. And I don't say that to knock that film. I love that movie. They made, you know, a couple. But I say that to say we always had the expectation that we weren't necessarily going to be critically embraced. It's just, you know, there are You know, particularly in 2024, there is a whole wonderful pipeline of let's call it quote unquote elevated horror. You know, A24 is doing a magnificent job of that, and I think those play excellently to critics. And I don't mean that in a patronizing way. They're fucking awesome movies. Like nobody's making better movies than Ari Aster, right? But I think they you know they, we just so to answer your question, I think we always had a sense that we were not going to be a critical darling. Right? It was more about will we satisfy our audience? Because again, I think when you're looking at critics, you innately have a set of critics that don't like horror. And then you also have a set of, you know, critics who probably want, like, you know, some horror with a real hardcore bite. And I'm not, look, by the way, I'm not sitting here telling you that we made Citizen Kane either, but you're asking me, you know, like what I anticipated, like, you know, it was that. I think the only thing that I would point out is, you know, it's Rotten Tomatoes is certainly a part of our culture. You know, I think what happened with that was the movie wasn't screened ahead of time, and we had some early reviews, like there were like 5 reviews that went up very early, and all of a sudden that sort of, so we ranked our film low. And I think that, you know, became sort of this, you know, cross to bear, if you will. Again, like, I'm very realistic. We're at 20 on Rotten Tomatoes. Again, I don't think, but at the same time, it, like, it became a headline before people had a chance to experience the film or sort of, like, process it on their own. And I think that's ever so where it gets... you know, I think that is the challenge of the internet. You know, I think for any film, whether it's or otherwise, like, you know, verdicts are being declared Thursday night before people sure. are interested in a movie even, you know, get a chance to gauge it. So, I think we would all be, you know, sort of better off to let people experience movies before there's sort of a mark on them. And again, if people see the movie and don't like it, like, I respect it. I do. You know, it's not for everyone.
So just to finish up here, of course, you know, I got to ask, and I don't know if you know or if you can say, but the movie's done very well. Horror is better than any other genre at capitalizing on success. Is there any sense that this is a one and done, or is this maybe going to be like, you know, we're going to get a follow-up here?
You know, I had another reporter ask me that yesterday, and like, look, we're really proud of this movie. Ultimately, that's a decision that is made by Sony, right? But we certainly are in a place where the movie is succeeding, has found an audience. There are comparable films out there that have hit our number and have received a sequel. So I just say that's, you know, entirely in the hands of the studio that was generous enough to green light it, and hopefully they're you know, excited by the results and eager to do another one, because we certainly are excited too.
All right, I think that's going to do it. Any other things that you wanted to mention before we wrap it up, Ryan, or any like takeaways that jumped out at you from your conversation with Scott?
I just want to point out that Scott, when we had the conversation, wasn't necessarily planned as a podcast, so it was just like over the phone. So the audio, I did my best to make it as listenable as possible. In my, you know, thanks to my previous life as an audio guy before I got into journalism. But yeah, that's why the audio was a little bit, you know, the way that it was. But hopefully, it was still all right.
Okay, cool. Well, yeah, I encourage people to read Ryan's article at slashfilm.com and read a bunch of other stuff at slashfilm.com as well. You can find much more about Tarot and a bunch of other movies there. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Create the deck of your dreams now at Menards. Spend less time maintaining your deck and more time enjoying it. with UltraDeck low-maintenance composite decking from Menards. It's easy to install and built to last. Plus, get free estimates fast with our deck design program in-store and on Menards.com. Save big on UltraDeck. And check out more great deals happening now at Menards. Save